VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk. Ladies and gentlemen, tensions are high. They're high on Capitol Hill and they're high across the nation as the chairs of two House committees announced the filings of articles of impeachment against President Donald Trump. Here's House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler.
The House Committee on the Judiciary is introducing two articles of impeachment charging the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, with committing high crimes and misdemeanors.
And here is House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff.
We stand here today because the President's continuing abuse of his power has left us no choice. To do nothing would make ourselves complicit in the President's abuse of his high office, the public trust, and our national security.
And House Republican Whip Steve Scalise had this to say afterwards.
They're not impeaching the President because they can list an impeachable offense. They're impeaching him because they're afraid he will get reelected.
And that is just a sampling of some of the comments that are out there. Joining us today with news and analysis of what's transpiring, not only with the impeachment, but also the Inspector General's report that came out just the day previous, the testimony that's going on by Mr. Horowitz. We welcome Robert Romano, who is Vice President of Public Policy with Americans for Limited Government. Robert, nice to have you with us today.
It's great to be on again. Thank you.
So yesterday, while being flanked by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, we have Adam Schiff, along with Jerry Nadler, other top Democrats, announced these two articles of impeachment to be brought against the president. I'm going to, these are charges of abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. We'll be breaking those down in just a moment, but give us your overall reaction to what's unfolding on this issue, Robert.
Well, you've got two charges so far, abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. And then the first is the, your listeners are aware, the Democrats are accusing President Trump of leveraging foreign aid to Ukraine in exchange for supposed investigations into the president's political opponents, including former Vice President Joe Biden. The obstruction charge is that certain White House employees, presidential advisors to the president, are not being allowed to testify before Congress under the guise of executive privilege.
You know, I find, you know, this Article 1 that claims that abuse of power you were just talking about, that using the powers of his high office, President Trump solicited the interference of a foreign government, Ukraine, in the 2020 United States presidential election. Congressman Nadler said it's an impeachable offense for the president to exercise the powers of his public office to obtain an improper personal benefit while ignoring or injuring the national interest. Robert, as you hear these statements, I went back and said, didn't the hearings just disprove that very thing?
I think so. I think that they showed that the president actually, when he was actually questioned about it by the diplomats prior to the aid being released, that what he wanted in exchange for the foreign aid or any investigations or anything like that, and the president said no quid pro quo.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything on the record is actually exculpatory for the president insofar as he never actually demanded it, whether in the transcript with his phone call with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, that there would be anything in exchange for investigations. He was asking for investigations, frankly, that had been ongoing long before Zelensky was even elected into the Burisma Holdings Company. These are investigations in Ukraine that date back years, and there was also a question of money laundering, to the United States that could have potentially violated U.S. laws that the Ukrainian prosecutors were attempting to pass along to the Justice Department, which is a legitimate enterprise. We have a mutual legal assistance treaty. Now, whether these investigations would make Trump look good or not good is not even relevant to the exercise of the treaty, because those are legitimate law enforcement prerogatives by Ukraine and by the Justice Department to look into those matters. We have statutes to prevent money laundering out of Ukraine with money pilfered from the Yanukovych regime, from the Ukrainian treasuries, some of that money was supposedly had flown to Burisma. It's not Donald Trump's fault that Joe Biden's son got named to the Burisma board and that they were a question for corruption and stealing from the people of Ukraine. And certainly, you know, our attitude is that, you know, maybe Hunter Biden should have to give back the money back to the people of Ukraine because it could have been dirty money that they were paying him with out of Burisma. We don't really know. But there is a statute that provides for that under U.S. code. So President Trump and the Justice Department, it would be perfectly well within the bounds of the law to look at Burisma holdings and to look at any U.S. Persons, including Hunter Biden, who received money from Burisma, because they were the head of the company was a Yanukovych energy minister who was awarding kind of natural gas exploration contracts to himself. So I think those are all legitimate venues for investigation, and you don't even approach a quid pro quo there. Those were ongoing investigations.
Yeah, not to mention also, but it was former Vice President Joe Biden. He's the one that's laughing on tape. He's the one telling an audience that he threatened to withhold $1 billion in aid to Ukraine if that prosecutor was not fired. A prosecutor who may have been looking into his son's, you know, getting $50,000 a month on being on the board. A Burisma?
Thereabouts. And that what we don't know is what President Obama, what the policy there was that Joe Biden freelancing, was that a directive from President Obama? Withholding the IMF loans or whatever those loan guarantees were, could have been a valid exercise of presidential power in exchange for something like, for example, firing the prosecutor. If the purpose was to get Hunter Biden off the hook or Hunter Biden's company off the hook with a corrupt motive, and President Obama didn't know anything about that, I think we'd have, you know, there's something to look into there. So I think that there are more questions that need to be asked about the Biden threat of the loan guarantees and how much the White House was in the loop on that. One imagines they were.
And again, I believe it's important to point out President Zelensky of Ukraine said many times he felt no pressure from President Trump, no quid pro quo. And we also learned that President Trump actually invited President Zelensky to the White House with no preconditions.
That's right. And they were going to have the meeting right at the end of August between Trump and Zelensky. That was going to be in Poland. And at the last minute, President Trump canceled his visit, and he sent Pence instead because there was a hurricane hitting the United States, as you recall. And so that meeting would have happened before I think any of this became public, and that there, it would have been perfectly clear by then. If it wasn't clear based upon the July 25 transcript phone call between Trump and Zelensky, that there was no exchange for military aid for investigations. And that was a presumption that Gordon Sondland, the ambassador to the European Union, U.S. ambassador, he had made when he spoke with Zelensky's aide, Yermak, at that meeting between Pence and Zelensky, and they were asking, why is there a pause on military aid? And he said, oh, it must have something to do with the statements of anti-corruption and Burisma that we were talking about earlier. But he says he's only presuming, and so that wasn't the actual policy. Nobody communicated to Gordon Sondland that that was the case, that to pass that message along to Ukraine. And so I think that he's actually the source of all of the confusion on that issue. And as far as we're concerned, that's kind of game, set, match on any impeachment.
Right.
I don't even know why they're still pursuing it. They have evidence that's exculpatory in hand, and they're just going full steam ahead. It's not unlike how President Trump found himself embroiled in a counterintelligence investigation in 2016, where no matter how much information shows that he wasn't a Russian agent, they say that must mean he's a Russian agent.
And what's interesting is that there's allegations in this, and we're going to be getting into that in the report that was issued Monday, but allegations that our national security were threatened by the president's actions, President Trump's actions. How was it threatened, Robert? Have they defined that?
I don't think so. The president sets American foreign policy at his sole discretion as the head of the executive branch. That's the separation of powers. That's the limited government. That's the federal constitution, frankly. And so it's contradictory to suggest that the president is the threat to national security. No, the president protects national security. That's his job. If he's abusing his power in some capacity or endangering the country, that would be cause for removal. But that's not what they're accusing him of here.
The second charge, obstruction of Congress, and I've heard of obstruction of justice, but is obstruction of Congress an impeachable offense? I guess a portion of every Congress would say, well, the president obstructed me. I wanted to get this bill passed. President spoken against it. Anyone could allege that a president was obstructing Congress. We have Robert Ray, who investigated Bill Clinton, saying, quote, I remain of the view that a well-founded impeachment must involve a crime. Obstruction of Congress does not constitute a crime unless it constitutes obstruction of justice.
It's not a crime. Obstruction of Congress is something that they just made up and threw in there and said, oh, well, they're not showing up for these hearings. But they have legitimate, I think, constitutional claims of executive privilege. The Supreme Court has acknowledged executive privilege. They may not have outlined the full kind of boundaries of what would and would not be covered, but the general idea is that the president gets candid advice from his advisors. And that it would affect the ability to get that advice if every time the Congress wants, people in the White House have to come and testify after providing advice to the president. Oh, what did you tell the president? And so that's kind of the theory behind, I think, executive privilege there. And I think that's a normal kind of give and take between the executive and legislative branches, certainly not an impeachable offense. It's just separation of powers. Separation of powers is not an impeachable offense. That's the executive branch asserting its prerogatives under Article 2 of the Constitution.
Yeah, yeah.
And if they want to challenge a subpoena in federal court, they're more than welcome to do that. And that would be the proper venue, not an impeachment inquiry.
And these are things they did not pursue in that regard. I mean, the president's been accused of subverting the Constitution, but on the contrary, he's the one that's upholding the Constitution, especially the separation of powers here. President Trump sent out a tweet, all capital letters, witch hunt. Do you agree, Robert?
It is a witch hunt. Perfectly so. Witch hunts in the in the Middle Ages and in some cases colonial America, where people basically brought up on false charges that they were like spawns of Satan or something. They were working. They were witches, but they really weren't witches. And so here you have false allegations against Trump and his campaign that they were Russian agents. Now we're getting false allegations that Trump had some sort of corrupt dealing with the president of Ukraine, but pursuing legitimate law enforcement investigations that were ongoing before Trump was even in office, frankly, and to say nothing of Zelensky, who only got elected in April, it's absurd. And the fact that the Democrats or Joe Biden finds himself kind of wrapped up in that is his fault. He shouldn't have had his son working for the Burisma company. He probably pulled strings to get it done, to get him on that board. Or Burisma wanted him there because Joe Biden had access. There's a lot of eyebrows that are raised by that. The State Department was asking those very questions. They were prepared to testify about Hunter Biden's role at Burisma. Yovanovitch, she had to testify. Oh yeah, when I was being confirmed as U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, that was one of the questions they were prepping me for, because there was a direct appearance of a conflict of interest. The State Department acknowledged it. So Trump raising the same conflict of interest with the president of Ukraine, saying maybe you should take a second look at the Burisma investigation. It might not have been fully completed because Joe Biden had it shut down. Maybe you want to look at that again. That is perfectly legitimate. That is not corruption. It's the opposite of corruption.
Robert Romano is with us here today. Folks, a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to take a look as to the report that was released just the day previous. The Department of Justice and Inspector General's report on the FISA abuses. Back in 1 minute, you're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, in an evolutionary sense, what do the terms advanced and primitive mean?
Chris, primitive animals are thought to be those that evolved long ago, which gave rise to more and more advanced types. Single-cell organisms are the most primitive, and then marine invertebrates, and up to fish, amphibians, mammals, and eventually man, the most advanced of all. Within each mammal type, evolutionists say that the more advanced ones are the ones that are modern. But extinct varieties were hardly primitive. Chris, the whole concept of primitive advances an evolutionary idea which is wrong on the face of it. Evolution did not happen. God created each basic category, much as we see it today. None is more advanced than the other. Each is complex. And that's the way I see it from a Back to Genesis perspective.
Visit our website at icr.org. I'm Chris O'Brien. Thanks for tuning in.
You're listening to Crosstalk on BCY America. Robert Romano is with us today. He is Vice President of Public Policy with Americans for Limited Government. They write on many, many issues. DailyTorch.com is our website. That's DailyTorch.com. We'll be getting to the unfolding of the Inspector General's report on FISA abuses from Monday here in just a moment. But as we were talking, Robert, in regard to this whole matter of impeachment and President Trump, you know, saying witch hunt, I mean, it's actually, I believe it was Adam Schiff that made up a fraudulent statement. He read it to Congress and said it came from the president. I mean, there is fraud if you want to see it.
That's
Hello, Robert. Okay. Tell you what, we just lost Robert. We're going to regain a conversation with Robert here in just a moment. Robert Romano with us today. Again, he's Vice President of Public Policy with Americans for Limited Government. Their website being DailyTorch.com, DailyTorch.com. And let's get right back here. Let's see, reconnecting with Robert. Robert, again, Adam Schiff, fraudulent, his reading, the thing that came from the president?
Absolutely. The opening statement in this impeachment inquiry was just, I imagine James Comey helped to write it or something, because it's all about mob bosses and everything. But I more seriously, Schiff is the one who's engaged in surveillance of his fellow committee member, ranking member Devin Nunes, the president's attorneys, Jay Sekulow and Rudy Giuliani, as well as a journalist, John Solomon, who's done a lot of groundbreaking reporting on Ukraine, and using the congressional subpoena power. And so, not only is there fraud, but there's a rank abuse of power by Adam Schiff and this committee, and it is a witch hunt.
Yeah. Well, one more thing on this, and we're hearing different things. Some have said that a vote's going to happen by the end of the week. We understand also this. There's a vulnerable group of House Democrats floating the idea of censoring President Trump instead of impeaching him. Any comment on what's going on or what next steps are, or what do we know is happening?
Given the very weak case for impeachment that I think Democrats have here, their best bet is to actually just go for a censure or just have this thing shot down in the House. If they kick it over to the Senate, they're only going to embarrass themselves and the country and drag us through another couple months of this. That basically what's going to happen on the Senate side is Republicans are going to call all of the witnesses that Democrats refuse to call on the House side, and that might include the anonymous so-called CIA whistleblower. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's going to be good for the prosecution or for the president's accusers. You're going to find out all just the slimy underbelly of all this. You're going to have people coming in who can testify to just how corrupt Burisma was, why it was a legitimate investigation. And you could have officials from the Justice Department come in to testify about what interactions that there have been over the years, dating back to the Obama administration on this Burisma company, and all of the legitimate questions that have surrounded it, including we'll have to replay the fact that Hunter Biden's role on the board of directors there was the subject of Senate testimony by Yovanovitch.
It's amazing, folks, and certainly you can weigh in with your members of the House of Representatives, letting them know your views, 202-225-3121. There are many that are having to make some decisions here soon. No doubt they are meeting and within caucuses and so forth, determining what steps are we going to take next, 202-225-3121. Robert, just a day previous to all of this unfolding, Department of Justice Inspector General's report on FISA abuses was released. What did we learn, and how is all this related to these current impeachment charges?
Yeah, so the beginning in the summer of 2016, the Justice Department and the FBI were seeking to get a spying warrant, a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act warrant from the FISA court against the Trump campaign. They were going after Carter Page, a foreign policy advisor, under the thinnest of reeds, which was that, he gave a speech in Moscow, a commencement address at a new economics school in July of 2016. And so he had meetings in Russia, and he was the subject of the Steele dossier, who, noting the fact that he was on YouTube in Moscow, came up with this whole story about how he and Paul Manafort were helping Russia hack the DNC and put these emails onto WikiLeaks. We now know it was all concocted, though, because Steele's primary subsource in January of 2017 admitted to the FBI that it was all hearsay, that he didn't have, they didn't have good sourcing on it. It was for, you know, over drinks of beer. He heard some of this stuff at a bar, and he didn't stand by the allegations. When Steele was questioned, he called his primary source a boaster, an egoist, and given to embellishment. And Steele ultimately said that the information needed to be further corroborated and verified. So when the president's chief accusers were questioned about it, they wouldn't stand by the allegations. So why did the FBI and the Justice Department stand by them for so long? They kept on renewing the FISA applications. They never turned over exculpatory information to the FISA court. They knew in August of 2016, before they ever filed for a FISA warrant, that Carter Page was a CIA agent reporting on Russians, and then they spun it around. They used his contacts with Russians as evidence that he was a Russian agent, and they didn't disclose to the fact to the FISA court that he was a CIA agent reporting on Russians, which would have been probably, you know, killed the, they probably wouldn't have even filed the FISA application. The Office of Intelligence at the National Security Division was demanding to know if Carter Page was an asset of another agency, and the case agent involved said, oh, it's not relevant. It was relevant. He was reporting on Russians. The whole matter was relevant because the whole case was about Russia, and his relationship would be easily explained by the fact that his job was to report back to the CIA his contacts with Russian intelligence officers. It's just an unbelievable abuse of power. Michael Horowitz has done a fantastic job in service to this country, and we look forward to the findings of Attorney General Barr and U.S. Attorney John Durham. We got to prevent this from happening again, yeah. But in order for that to happen, justice must be served.
Well, President Trump commented on this Horowitz report. He said its conclusions are everything a lot of people thought it would be, but far worse. He said it's a disgrace what's happened with respect to the things that were done to our country. It should never happen to another president. It's far worse than I ever would have thought possible. Is this report worse than what we knew?
It, in many ways it is, because what we didn't know was that they had just concrete information before Trump even was sworn into office that would have had their whole case falling apart. Attorney General Barr was noting that in January of 2017, their whole case fell apart, and they just went gung-ho ahead, and they didn't question. They didn't even bother. And they didn't turn any of this information over to the FISA court about their case falling apart. And so FISA court's a top-secret court, so the defense attorney is never present. So it's a setting where only the government gets to present evidence, and it depends upon the honest kind of record-keeping by Federal Bureau of Investigation agents and Justice Department to check all these boxes to make certain that the information is being provided is accurate. But what we've learned is that the FISA process is a complete joke. They might as well use rubber stamps. They allow non-witness statements. Christopher Steele, former British agent who's hired by Fusion GPS, who's hired by the DNC and the Clinton campaign to come up with this dossier, he wasn't a witness to any of the allegations. He didn't speak to senior Kremlin advisors or Russian foreign ministry officials like his dossier said. No. And neither did his subsource. According to the Horowitz report, the primary subsource had his own network of subsources, and not even they had spoken to the figures who were mentioned in the dossier. It was totally concocted. They made it up. I mean, we've been chasing ghosts and fictions for 3 years now. People wondering, oh, was this Russian disinformation? Vladimir Putin wanted us to think that all this was true. And we come up with all these conspiracy theories about what was behind the dossier. You know what was behind it? Vapor, air, made-up gossip.
Wow. Robert, this is amazing here, too. It was Attorney General Barr. He was on NBC News, and he said, as far as he knows, this was the first time in history that the federal government used counterintelligence techniques against a presidential campaign.
No, this is the greatest scandal in American history, certainly the greatest spying scandal. You have to go back to J. Edgar Hoover to have examples of the FBI behaving this politically, this badly. The idea that there's no political bias here, I think is, I mean, maybe they didn't find the smoking gun in terms of did pre-strap when he ordered the counterintelligence investigation. Did he have any political malice in his heart, or was he looking at what the Alexander Downer, the Australian diplomat, had told them about George Papadopoulos, which turned out not to be true, that, you know, that there wasn't any information to be gotten from the Russians about Hillary Clinton or her email server or anything like that, because George Papadopoulos was never charged with any conspiracy with Russia. nor was Carter Page, nor was Michael Flynn, nor was Paul Manafort, nor was Roger Stone. None of the people who came under the Mueller probe and investigation, the crimes they were charged with, were all committed during the investigation, basically. They were process crimes. Oh, you weren't fully truthful with investigators here. But none of the crimes related to helping Russia hack the DNC or John Podesta emails and put them onto WikiLeaks or any of the Russian interference in the election activities.
Inspector General Michael Horowitz, he's testifying today. Who's he testifying to, and is there anything new coming forth from his testimony outside this report?
Well, I highly advise your listeners, they can check it out on C-SPAN. Michael Horowitz is testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee, and that's chaired by Lindsey Graham. And the senators, as you imagine, in the majority, Republican majority, are very upset and basically holding Horowitz's feet to the fire on all this, saying, how could this possibly happen? And it underscores just how unprecedented this level of abuse, spying on a political campaign, the opposition party in an election year, really is. And we're breaking new ground here. But you've got hawkish Republican senators saying, we don't know if we should reauthorize FISA unless this is fixed, because we can't have this ever happening again on U.S. soil, spying on presidential campaigns, politically weaponizing the Justice Department to go after political opponents. They've opened a Pandora's box on this.
They have, and they've probably also opened up a new Lindsey Graham in all of this, too. I mean, we've seen him come unglued. I mean, whether it be the Supreme Court nominee hearings from previous to this, he is downright frustrated with this whole matter that's going on, and it seems like he's really digging in his heels to get to the truth of the matter.
I think a lot of eyes have been opened by not only the Kavanaugh hearings, but how this FISA process was abused and how President Trump has just been so mistreated, but particularly by the federal bureaucracy, this so-called resistance. Attorney General Barr just had a great speech at the Federalist Society where he speaks about this problem and why the framers envisioned a unitary executive branch so that you wouldn't have factions within the executive branch fighting for primacy and control, which was one of the downfalls of the framers were looking at examples like the Roman Republic, and so they wanted to prevent that sort of factionalization in the executive branch. So they said, we're going to have one president at a time, and all of the executive power is going to be vested in him. And that was the unitary theory of executive that Alexander Hamilton wrote about in the Federalist Papers, and I think is what is being undermined here. What you had here was the Obama administration ordering an investigation into the incumbent or the president-elect, basically, after the election. By then, it was a presidential campaign, then it was the president-elect, and they said, we're going to carry it over into the administration, and then we're going to lie to President Trump about the extent of the investigation, leave him in the dark, thereby creating, I think, two executive branches, one that was working on behalf of the president's policies and one that was looking to unseat him. And when you call it a coup, I think that's what it refers to, is that the idea that this was designed to remove President Trump from power or to prevent him from ever taking power. Your listeners will recall there was an effort to overturn the Electoral College in December of 2016 before Trump was sworn in on the very basis of the Russia allegations.
We're going to take a quick break, and let's open our phone lines as well, friends. If you have a question you'd like to ask of our guest today, or a brief comment, our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. This all unfolding this week with the Inspector General's report Monday, yesterday the allegations of the impeachment charges, today more hearings. Back in a minute.
Christmas has become ground zero in an ongoing culture war where nativity scenes are nixed. Merry Christmas becomes Happy Holidays, and even the word Christmas is considered by some as offensive. Addressing this ongoing battle is the book The War on Christmas, edited by Bodie Hodge from Answers in Genesis. With full-color pictures and illustrations throughout, The War on Christmas provides answers concerning a host of issues and misconceptions surrounding Christmas. You'll learn where the name Christmas comes from. Is it a pagan holiday? What about replacing Christ with the letter X? You'll find chapters on the Christmas star, the virgin birth, the magi, why creation is important to Christmas, and so much more. This book also presents the gospel, which is often lost as this time is celebrated. The War on Christmas is available for a donation of $18 by calling VCY America at 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Robert Romano is our guest today. He's Vice President of Public Policy with Americans for Limited Government. Their website, dailytorch.com. That's dailytorch.com. Where will things go from today, Robert? We have the hearings before the Senate Judiciary Committee. What happens next on this timescale?
Well, John Durham's going to continue his investigation. Attorney General Barr laid out that some watershed could be reached on that investigation in the spring or early summer. So I would expect something by, the ballpark in July 4th, that whatever misconduct was occurred by the Justice Department and intelligence agencies in spying on the Trump campaign in 2016, we'll start to hear more about it over the next many months. FISA reauthorization has been punted by Congress until March. So there's a big FISA reauthorization battle, and I think how we look at the Horowitz report, how that kind of gets injected into the bloodstream in Washington, D.C. and Congress, how seriously do Democrats take these issues of abuse with the FISA court? When are they going to start acting, stop acting partisan and look at this with clear eyes and look at the clear abuses of power that occurred here? I mean, in one case, they knew as early as August 2016, as I mentioned earlier, that Carter Page was a CIA operative who was reporting on Russians, there was an opportunity to include that information from the CIA in the FISA application, which might have meant that there was no FISA application. Later on, when they were coming up for renewals and this issue came up again, a Justice Department lawyer doctored an email from the CIA that said he is a CIA operative and rewrote it to say he's not a CIA operative so that they could continue spying on Carter Page and the Trump administration on the grounds that he was a Russian agent, even though he was reporting on Russians. Like they just didn't play this straight at all. They wanted surveillance. They wanted Trump removed. This, I think, was premeditated. I look at it and I say they clearly wanted to get rid of Trump, and this was the means to the end. They think the ends justify the means, and it doesn't matter if they lied to the FISA court. Horowitz says, well, he can't find the evidence of political bias by leadership who initiated the investigation. He doesn't comment on the legality of the FISA warrants. He doesn't say if those were lawful, and we're going to hear from, I think, Barr and Durham on that count about whether these FISA warrants were legal or not. Clearly, the court authorized them, and so I think the wrongdoers will probably think, well, that's our get-out-of-jail-free card. We had a warrant. It wasn't warrantless surveillance. And fair enough, but it was fraudulent. They were withholding information from the FISA court. And so I think how that plays out and what you've got to get Christopher Wray in there. You've probably got to bring James Comey back to testify about some of this stuff.
It's going to take us well past the next election. Wow.
Probably.
Our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. Michael in Toledo, Oregon, you're on the air.
Hello, Mike. I've been reading the scriptures in Daniel 11.
Michael, can I have you, Michael, talk right into the mouthpiece of your phone, please? We're getting it.
I've been reading Daniel 11, and it sounds just like in the end times you're going to have three leaders, and it sounds just like Bush, Obama, and Trump, and then none of them are going to honor him as their leader.
Okay, Michael, do you have a question of our guest here today or a comment on the impeachment or the FISA itself?
I just think the Democrats are just trying to keep him from being our president. Sir.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. Mark in Monroe, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Yeah. I think this whole Horowitz sham justifies Trump firing James Comey. The fact that Horowitz wouldn't admit to that there was any bias, but he did admit that there was FBI mishandling of this whole thing. I think this goes back to Devin Nunes referring to the wiretapping back that would, in my opinion, totally suggest that Obama was the one behind this whole scene that instigated. And I think Comey is covering for him, and I think this might be the powder keg that may or may not go off.
Mark, thank you for the comment. Robert, your thoughts?
Well, as far as the president's involvement of this, the only documentation we have is from Susan Rice writing an email to herself about a January 5th, 2017 meeting where Obama was briefed on Russian election interference, and afterwards they had a meeting with Sally Yates, James Comey, Joe Biden, President Obama, and Susan Rice, where they were discussing steps forward, going forward, heading towards the Trump administration, and about withholding information from the incoming Trump team on Russia, specifically as a matter of discretion on behalf of James Comey. And I don't see anything before that where the president is briefed on this specific topic. We know that the Steele dossier was appended to the Intelligence Committee assessment on Russian interference. So Obama was certainly brought into the loop there, and that would have been the time to tell him about the surveillance. But there doesn't appear to be any documentation prior to January of 2017 where Obama is brought into the loop about FISA surveillance, as remarkable as that seems. Doesn't mean they didn't know. It just means I can't tell you there's a public document that Obama was behind all of this. He may well have been, but we haven't seen that yet, and he might not have even found out about it until after the election.
Let's go to Ed in Spencer, Tennessee. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. I'd just like to give my thoughts on this impeachment. I think the Democrat actions are a classic example of Revelation 22:15, where it says, "Whoever loveth and maketh a lie." The Democrats know full well that it is a bold-faced lie against Trump. That's all I have to say. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. This is something that the deception just seems to be so rampant in all of this, Robert.
No, I think the ends justify the means. What you said here was a clear abuse of power, where federal agents were willing to put politics before the administration of justice. And I think that's just appalling. It's the basest form of corruption that we've seen throughout human history, where you're willing to use the law to achieve, I think, these political ends and to bring up people up on charges of things that they never did. I mean, Think of Carter Page. I mean, he should get a fortune out of this. So he should be, like, awarded $1 billion because of the abuse of his civil liberties that has occurred here, to say nothing of the entire Trump administration. The first 3 years of the presidency has been irrevocably altered. Like, history has been altered.
Yeah.
What's this going to mean going forward for U.S.-Russian relations? I mean, if it all ends in World War III, you know, will future historians look back on this moment as being a catalyst? I mean, this is so exceptionally dangerous when you consider the fact that both countries have 6,000 nuclear weapons pointed at one another.
Mm.
And that and relations have never been worse. The Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty has now evaporated. In addition to the ABM Treaty from 20 years ago, the Strategic Arms Reductions Treaty, that's on the table up for renewal. Is that even going to be renewed? Is all the progress that Reagan and Gorbachev made back in the 1980s, built on by Bush and even, frankly, Obama, with START II, is all that going to go by the wayside? Are we going to go back to the old days, or to something even worse? I don't think that anybody's really thought through the long-term strategic implications of these allegations, these dangerous allegations against President Trump, and the fact that they knew it was all bogus by January of 2017, before he was even sworn in. They knew that Michael Cohen had never been to Prague. That's in the Horowitz report as well. They knew it was not true. So by the time they debunked the Steele dossier, which was the basis for FISA surveillance, why didn't the investigation end? Instead, they're forcing Jeff Sessions to recuse himself, and then we get a special counsel.
Yeah.
I think because they had a premeditated motive to get rid of President Trump, make sure he never implemented his policy.
That deep state is very deep, folks. Dennis in Chattanooga, Tennessee, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you, Jim, for taking my call. This is Dennis in Chattanooga. I want to say once again how much we really appreciate BCY and your program and all that you do to help bring the truth to the world and to America. I certainly appreciate your guest today and his program there and going over all this impeachment, this fraud against President Trump. Washington right now is a circus up there in the House of Representatives. And I want to say this, too. I know your broadcast is not just nationwide. You are global. So people hear you all over the world. And I want to remind all the seniors, because I'm a senior, my wife is a senior, I want them to remind them, I want to ask them, did they not get a raise on their Social Security check this past year or the year before that? We did, and it was a pretty decent raise. And I want to say this, we never got one with Barack Obama. We never got one with George Bush Sr., George Bush Jr., and certainly not Clinton. And we wouldn't have gotten that had we not had a man in there trying to get this economy under control and get our get peace back in the country, bring our military back to full strength and all of that. So we will be voting for President Trump again in 2020, and if he could run four more years after that, we'd vote for him again.
Dennis, thank you.
And he's going to come out on top of this. And God bless you, and Merry Christmas, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Dennis, for your call here today. Let's go to Steve in Salina, Kansas. You're on the air.
Hi, Jim. Hey, Robert. On this Horowitz guy, how can he not see that there's political bias here? I mean, you can just look at Lisa Page and Peter Strzok. Their texts were confiscated. They openly conspired against Trump. And then he found 17 inaccuracies and omissions. How can he say there's no political bias? I am not in this, and I can see that there is. From what I heard, what Horowitz did was just go around to FBI people and say, hey, did you do something wrong? No. Did you do something wrong? No. So I hope Barr and Durham have a lot more firepower than he did, because Horowitz was hardly a bull in a china closet.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Get your reaction to that, Robert. They did find at least 17, what do they call them, significant errors?
I think he lays out the facts and things that are actively being investigated by Durham. I don't think that Horowitz wanted to step on the Attorney General's toes and on Durham's toes. In terms of predication, that is an area of disagreement, whether this was adequately predicated. I think what Horowitz is saying is that Lisa Page and Peter Strzok were not the ones to initiate the investigation. They were ordered to do the investigation, and by the higher-ups, Priestrap was the one who initially ordered the counterintelligence probe on Papadopoulos in this Alexander Downer business, and that there was no documentation about his motives being political. If it had been Strzok and Page who initiated the investigation, then yeah, you got him dead to rights. That was politically motivated. They should have recused themselves from the investigation, given their political biases. Everyone who was looking at this and saying that they were opposed to Trump and, well, we got to get them out of power and this is going to lead to impeachment, and that was Strzok and Page. They should have never been a part of this investigation, I think. They were clearly had a conflict of interest. And then I think as you go up the food chain, getting better information, it's going to have to be from eyewitness testimony. So certainly Durham, he's going to have grand jury power. He can call people to testify. He can go beyond. He can look at the intelligence agencies. They're working with foreign governments and their intelligence services and getting information sharing going on there. So I think whatever Durham's going to come up with, if you think what Horowitz has is bad for the Justice Department, and it is devastating. This is like the worst scandal in American history, and we're very grateful for what Horowitz has given us here, because it provides a blueprint and lays down a fact basis for going at and re-examining FISA reauthorization. So this is an incredible, from our perspective, a very valuable service. He can't prosecute people. He's the inspector general. But just take the facts for what they are, because you know that Durham's looking at them. You know that Barr's looking at them. And they're, I think, very appalled about what's happened here, and they're not going to let it go by the wayside. I think they are fiercely determined to make certain that this never happens again. And there is a timeline there. President Trump might not get reelected in 2020. And so they know that they have probably until the end of, by November of 2020 to have some justice here. And not because, when they need to get back at the Democrats or anything like that. It's because we just can't have spying on presidential campaigns and have a functioning two-party system in this country.
I got to take a break here. We'll be back in 1 minute and come back right to your phone calls. Callers, stay on the line. We'll be with you in just a moment. This is Crosstalk on VCY America.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brennan House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. We've been doing a series on radio and television on information warfare and American Christians. My friend Jeff Nyquist makes a very good point in one of his books, that patriotism and paranoia have now been connected. Patriotism and paranoia. In other words, if you believe in certain values of America, such as national security, national sovereignty, borders, the threat from Islam, the threat from Marxism, the threat from globalism, you're now paranoid. No, you're just really holding to patriotic values. You believe in American values of sovereignty, security, our way of life, our culture, the purpose and function of government, reward the righteous, punish the wicked. Those are patriotic values. Well, now they've been defined as being paranoia. You're crazy. That's why they use terms like Islamophobia, homophobia, and xenophobia.
Yes, you're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Not quite the perspective you're going to gain from the major network media here tonight, but certainly that which presents the truth of what is going on, what's happening behind the scenes, and let some of the testimony come forth that was denied in the U.S. House of Representatives. Let's go to Merle, who's calling in from Tennessee. Merle, you're on the air.
Yeah, Jim, I just wanted to say I believe this un-American culture of corruption was ushered in through the Obama administration. If you remember, he went down and he campaigned for his cousin in Kenya, Dinga, and when they lost the election, they went out and they beat up Christians and they burnt Christian churches. It was like a culture of corruption that has been ushered into our nation. Mm. Also, I remember Hillary saying she's now going to join the resistance. I mean, this is unbelievable. This is America. Mm-hmm. You don't have an opposing resistance party. I mean, that's like treason.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I really believe Horowitz may have been threatened. I think Sessions may have been threatened. But Bill Barr, I'm praying for that man. I believe he's going to have the backbone, because he was asked, are you worried about pushback? And he said, no, you have to die sometime. That was his words.
Wow.
But I tell you what gives me peace, Jim. Everybody's going to stand before God someday, and nobody's getting away with anything.
Yeah. Thank you, Merle.
That's the peace, brother.
Appreciate your call. Let me ask you, Robert, he referred to the backbone of William Barr. Do you sense that as well?
Absolutely. I think he's the right man in the right place at the right time, and he's going to let justice be done, though, to heaven's fall.
Jose in Milwaukee, you're on the air.
Hi. This whole Russian-Ukraine impeachment hoax was pretty much done against President Trump before he was a candidate, you know, while he was still civilian.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, do you believe that the Patriot Act was used against him? Thank you.
Okay.
There was surveillance on the Trump campaign. I don't know if it specifically involved the Patriot Act. We're dealing with the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and they got the FISA warrant, and that's all a part of the Inspector General report. They did get surveillance on Carter Page, and the way that works is that they get his contacts and his contacts' contacts. So everyone that's on his Rolodex, and then everyone that's on his Rolodex's Rolodex. And that means they get all the phone calls going back in time, all of the emails, all of the text messages, and other documents via electronic surveillance. And this the period for that starts in October of 2016, and I believe goes all the way until September of 2017. So that covers the campaign, that covers the transition, and it covers the administration. So if Carter Page's contacts or contacts' contacts were in the White House, that means they had access to the White House. How that information was handled, I think, is probably classified. Horowitz did note that it was kept to a small amount of people who had immediate access to the surveillance information. The fact that it was all leaked to the news media and CNN and New York Times and so forth, I think tells us that it was weaponized and used as information warfare against the president-elect after the election, and then President Trump, once he was in office, to create the suggestion that he was a foreign agent and under an active investigation, when truly unprecedented. It turned out the reporting was accurate. There was an investigation, and now we know all about how it was carried out by Horowitz. Hopefully from Barr and Durham, we'll find out why it was carried out.
Let's go to Pat, calling from Wisconsin. You're on the air, Pat.
Hi. Aren't the Democrats just following the policy set forth by Harry Reid, where you lie about your political opponent if that's what's necessary to defeat them? Thank you.
Okay. Is that a
I don't think Harry Reid invented that trick.
Okay. Tyrone in Milwaukee, you're on the air.
Yes. Good afternoon, Jim. First-time caller I am. I've listened to you as much as I possibly can, so happy holidays to you and your family as well as your guests and America and the world as well. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to you, too.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Basically, a question would be two questions. I kind of got on Brandon there, too. He's kind of spoke about...
Okay, let's go right to the issue here with our guest.
Okay, he kind of spoke about the diversion there. Let me just say it this way here. my chain of thought here. We seem to have amnesia here because the Panama Papers were exposing both Putin and some of the people that were involved in a lot of these different things. I was wondering why did that investigation go silent? That the Panama Papers were exposing a lot of these people, and as far as the Saudis are concerned, as Pensacola, we see after 9/11, why do we keep training these people, flying them in? Yeah. After 9/11, they killed Khashoggi.
Yeah, and that's a different issue, Tyrone, and that's an issue we dealt with yesterday on the program. But do you have any information on the Panama Papers here, Robert?
I do know that that's one of the potential motivations for Russian interference in the elections. Mm-hmm. That could have been the Russian interference could have been pushed back from the Panama Papers. But I'm speculating, frankly. I don't know if there is a connection.
Okay, thank you, Tyrone, and to Ricky in Adams, you're on the air.
Yes, I just want to thank you for your radio station because I really love it. And I think this impeachment stuff with Trump, it's all going to be brought out in the end by God anyway, mm-hmm. because he does bring out liars, and it will all be brought out.
Yep. Okay. Thank you, Ricky. And there's no doubt of that whatsoever. We also search for the truth here as well and understand who the father of lies and deception is in all of this. How we've got just a minute and a half left here, Robert. How is this impacting the presidency of Donald Trump at this point? Is this hurting him? Is this going to hurt his chances for reelection? What's your assessment?
I think politically, Trump benefits from this, and he has all along. It always thrusts him into the underdog position, and I think that's where he's his most effective, frankly, politically, is that he's able to get the job done even when his back's against the wall or he's being challenged. And this is certainly a challenge that I don't think any president has ever had to face. And the American people, I think they can take solid. Just look at what a cool customer he is with all of this. They're getting USMCA done finally now. He got his tax cut plan through Congress. He's gotten two Supreme Court justices done. He's got his deregulation done. He's negotiating these trade deals. He's getting tough with China. Everything that President Trump said he would do when he ran for office, he's doing it. He's keeping his promises, and he's getting his job done. So I don't think it's affecting his job performance per se, because he's, I think, exceptional at it. But it certainly has harmed the presidency, and I think will harm future administrations as well. And I think in certain prerogatives on foreign policy, President Trump has been undermined. I mentioned U.S.-Russian relations before, just as a key area where Michael Flynn had concerns there. That's why he was the National Security Advisor. And that's all been undermined because of this conspiracy, frankly. And I hope it all turns out okay.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. Robert, thank you for being with us today.
Have a good day.
Robert Romano and the website DailyTorch.com. Thanks for joining us on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from CrosstalkAmerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.